Have you ever felt so overwhelmed with the stress and pressure of the complicated business details surrounding the planning for a loved one to enter long-term care? Have you ever felt the pressure of being unprepared and faced with the final planning and arrangements for funeral or memorial services of a loved one? Have you ever been so overwhelmed by the details surrounding estate planning and estate settlements and so forth? If so, stay tuned to learn how you can be best prepared and have a plan when we find ourselves faced with the pressures of personal end-of-life challenges.
Welcome to Planning for Tomorrow. We take life's most difficult questions, concerns, and challenges and turn them into manageable nuggets of information so that you can make the best decisions when you are planning for tomorrow. You can contact us at pftradio@gmail.com. You can check us out on Facebook, Planning for Tomorrow Radio. Or if you're calling from the local listening area, 304-399-8255, or long distance, 877-420-8255. Well, good morning and welcome to Planning for Tomorrow. I am Fred Kitchen along with Gene Dean. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning, Fred. Good to see you again.
Good
on
to see
beautiful
you.
Day.
It is going to be a beautiful day here in Huntington, West Virginia. What
it
do you think?
It certainly is. It is. And you've come up with an interesting guest. And I have to say, when I first read about her and what we were going to be talking about this morning, I thought, oh dear, this is going to be really sad and harrowing. But having read more and talked with you about it, it's going to be very interesting, very unusual, and there's even a local angle.
Absolutely. There's definitely a local angle here. And, you know, as we was talking before we went on the air, Gene, there are some things that you look at and you go, should we talk about this? And I think the reason why a lot of us don't know about things is because nobody talks about it. And everybody says, you know what, that's uncomfortable. Let's not talk about that.
Well, that's true. And you've met with a good reception on other things that you've talked about, more legal issues, powers of attorney, estate planning, all that kind
Absolutely.
Of thing. But this is getting right down to it.
This is getting down to the core of our hearts, I think. We're going to have Nancy Bourbon on the show today. She is from Connecticut. She lives in Connecticut. And she has founded a company called Bury a Child. Now, for those listening right now, when they heard me say the word bury a child, they're probably going, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, you know what?
Stay with us.
Yeah, stay with us. Stay with us, because Nancy, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Nancy, it's good to have you this morning.
Good morning,
thank
Nancy.
You. And
this
thank
is
you for
Jean.
Having me on the show.
Okay.
Tell us just a little bit about, give us a little bit of background of what you've done, Nancy, the history of where you come from and how you got to where you are right now as far as building Bury a Child.
Well, Fred, and thank you so much for having me on the show. I've been working with consumers, helping them make good funeral choices for some time, and just on a consultant basis. And about 5 or 6 years ago, I was made aware that if a family does not have the ability to pay a funeral director in most areas, not all areas, but most areas, mostly the city areas, urban areas, they cannot retrieve their child from the morgue or the hospital after they've passed. And a lot of families don't know what to do when their child passes away. They just don't have a frame of reference for that. We know what to do when our parents die. We know what to do when grandparents die and older people, but we're just really not prepared for the death of a child.
Right.
So there's a lot of components there. But what we do is we help bury indigent children with dignity. When families come to us and they say that we do not have the ability to pay a funeral director, then my nonprofit helps them pay for the service costs. We donate a casket. We donate a burial vault. We do a memorial blanket with the child's photograph on it. Mm-hmm. And we also do a funeral program. And the reason we do a memorial blanket is many children, of course, you know, they're not dying of natural causes. They're dying in accidents, and they're dying in unfortunate circumstances. So many times, there's a closed casket. So when the parents and the family come to the visitation, they just want to have something to look at, something to remind them of the happy life of their child.
You know, Nancy, you're saying something, you mentioned something there about the memorial blankets. That's something that we do at our funeral home at Henson Mortuary here locally. We provide a memorial blanket for every family we serve. And I tell you, the reason why that I really jumped on board with that is because you mentioned a couple things there. The closed casket situation, it definitely offers a keepsake, and it also offers that the family can keep after, but it also offers, I don't know, some type of a large memorial right there when the casket can't be opened. But what we're seeing is families are really migrating towards these memorial blankets that you're talking about. They're tapestries is what they are.
Yeah, they're beautiful. They're really beautiful.
Yeah, and so they're really something that really has really struck a chord with people in our area, and so we're really happy to be part of that also. So I think you're doing something great with that right there.
Yeah, thank you. And what I do is I work with about 300 funeral directors, including yourself, nationwide. And when I get a call or somebody refers somebody to me and the family is not able to pay a funeral director, we contact a funeral director in that area who is most of the time willing to waive their service fee.
Right.
And then, we provide the casket and the burial vault and all the other things to make the funeral a dignified funeral for the family, and so they can have some kind of closure. And they can, they can grieve as they should.
Right.
Because if you don't take your child, if you're not able to bury your child, it's very damaging from a psychological point of view. You'll fool yourself into thinking a year or two from now that you see your child in a shopping mall or on the playground. If you're not able to go through that grieving process, it can be very damaging to everyone involved. And it also doesn't honor the life of that little child who came into the world.
Absolutely.
And needs to go back.
Absolutely.
When you talk about a child, Nancy, are we talking about certain age limits here? Are we talking about babies, or do you go up through teenagers, or how does this work?
It actually works from the beginning of birth, which a lot of people refer to as gestational remains, which means it's a stillborn,
mm-hmm.
all the way up to 18 years of age.
And Fred, before we came on the air, you were telling me something that I think is a very generous effort on the part of Henson Mortuary, that if a baby, and I'm thinking of really a baby, not a child, dies, that you at Henson, you do not charge for the...
Right. That's something when my wife and I purchased Henson Mortuary a couple years ago, that was one of the commitments that we were going to make to our community, was that we were going to bury babies for nothing. I mean, we were going to help families out because, you know, we've seen it with friends, we've seen it with other family, church family members and things like that, where a lot of people don't have insurance, life insurance on a child, on a baby. It's just the facts. So it puts them in a real difficult position. You know, they've lost something that's so emotional. It's been such an emotional experience for them, and they've lost a baby, and then they're looking at someone saying, hey, I need X amount of dollars, and I need it today. So we said, hey, you know, we're not going to position ourselves to be in that. We're going to help these families.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly what we've done there as far as burying babies in our area. We do that at no cost to families to be able to help them out. And we're working with, like Nancy here, with Bury a Child, to where we can go ahead and offer other assistance to families up to 18 years old, like she said. So, I mean, we just feel like it's something that we need to do. We're taking it, and Nancy and I actually spoke yesterday a little bit prior to preparing for the radio show, and that was one of the things I told her. I said, you know, we just feel like it's one of those things that we need to commit to our area, and we need to do things differently. And Nancy agrees. Across the country, there's a lot of things that needs to be done differently, and we want to be part of that that new funeral service that's taking things differently, that's actually listening to the families out there and saying, hey, here's what we really want, and we want to make sure that those families are getting what they're asking for.
Fred, I really wanted to hear from Nancy about her involvement mm-hmm. with that disastrous house fire in Charleston. Maybe we ought to take a commercial break here and then get Nancy to tell us about that.
Nancy, can you stick right with us?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
We'll take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back to Planning for Tomorrow. And we are back to Planning for Tomorrow, and our guest that we have is Nancy Bourbon, and she is with Bury a Child. She's the founder of Bury a Child. And when we went to commercial break, Gene, we were talking a little bit about the history of Bury a Child. Nancy was kind of giving us some information there. But, Nancy, I want to take a few minutes here, if you can kind of take us on a journey here that kind of has some local ties to us here in West Virginia, of a fire that took place back in March of 2012 here. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right, and I want to thank the Maranatha, I believe it's Maranatha, Fellowship Church.
Maranatha, yes.
Yes, in St. Albans.
Uh-huh.
They were so helpful in trying to raise money in the area. We raised about $34,000 for this family.
Wow.
What happened was there was a house fire. There were two sisters, and between them they had seven children. And they were celebrating a birthday party, and they put the candles on the paper towel in the kitchen, something that, you know, you would do normally. You wouldn't really think much of it. and the paper towel smoldered, and the house caught on fire, and they all perished in the fire. And it was so hard on the grandparents because they lost both their daughters and they lost all their grandchildren.
Wow.
Terrible.
And they only had one picture of the group of the children, and they really, you know, they needed to have something to hold on to, something to go to the funeral and to look at and to memorialize these little children. And they ranged in age from 18 months, little Emmanuel Jones, mm-hmm. Elijah Scott was 3.
Wow.
Timothy Bryan Carter Camp was 7, Jeremiah Carter Camp 3, Kiana Carter Camp 8, and Alicia Carter Camp was 26.
Wow.
It was just horrific. They were all young people and babies. And I did a memorial blanket for each one of them and a funeral program. I took the picture and took each child out and gave them their own little presents. And they all had little caskets. And Todd Fields, who's a great, a mutual friend of yours.
Yeah, friend of mine, yes.
Mm-hmm. Actually coordinated the entire effort. So what turned out to be a family that really had no money. They everything they had was gone in the fire. Mm-hmm. And the grandparents really were at a quandary, like what to do. No one ever faces this level of horrific tragedy in their life, hopefully. And everyone kind of pulled together and really helped this family out. And really gave all those little children and their young mothers a dignified burial.
How did you learn about this incident, Nancy? Did they come to you, or did you learn about it through the media, or what happened?
I have 7,000 funeral directors on my Facebook page, and I have a number of different groups. So I get calls all the time from funeral directors saying, oh, we need help, we have an indigent family, can you work with us? So most of my referrals come directly from funeral directors who actually really want to help these children. They really want to help the families, but they can't actually absorb the total cost of a funeral, which can be quite high.
Right, exactly.
And most of the time, these are young people, and they don't have, as Fred said, they don't have life insurance. In this economy, the first thing to go is your insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And if you lose your job, you lose that by default. So this family was in a really bad way, and they really needed the help. And this is a classic case of the entire community coming together and honoring these little children that they lost in their community. And it was a beautiful send off. And the church was just they were so wonderful. I mean, they really reached out and they put their arms around the community and really brought everyone together in a really beautiful way.
Isn't it amazing how a community can come together? We can feel so divided at times due to a lot of different things, due to political views, due to, different works that are being shut down, you know, factories that are being shut down. There's a lot of division that comes from a lot of different directions. But isn't it amazing how that we as human beings we have the ability to come together when something devastating does happen in a community. And come together and rally and make things happen. We can make things happen when we have the want to.
Well,
yes,
Nancy is someone who's making things happen. That's for sure.
And, well, thank you.
And Nancy, tell us a little bit about how long. I want to talk a little bit more about the fire there in Charleston. But tell us how long you haven't really had bury a child very long, right?
No, I've really been doing it on my own. I put a website up, and believe it or not, I get about 60 calls a month. And the majority of the calls are really not people who are indigent, meaning without any resources to bury their child.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of the calls are people from communities like yours that lost a child, and they're so devastated they have no frame of reference on what to do. Some of the questions are, I lost my 2-year-old. Do I have to buy a big casket and put them in that big casket? And from places like California, where the burial plots can run as high as $8,000.
Wow.
People ask, is it appropriate to cremate my child? I mean, will they go to hell? A lot of that is based on their religious beliefs, but they just need somebody to walk them through the process of how do you select a funeral home? What are the steps that you need to take? What do I need to do?
Right. Nancy, that's one of the things, and Gene can verify this, that's one of the things that we, with this show, with Planning for Tomorrow, when
mm-hmm.
we started this show, that's the whole purpose of what I'm trying to do for our area here is I guess, go a completely different direction. I'm not as traditional. I have a lot of traditional values, the funeral home does. But yet, at the same time, we look at our, I guess you would say, our marketing or our education-based marketing as really we want to be a community resource for people. We want people to know that we're more than just the funeral home, that they can actually come to us and gather this information you're talking about, because we've seen the same thing that you're seeing with these phone calls that you're getting, is that people don't know where to get the information. They don't know where to go.
No.
You know, they don't know how to get that information, and they feel like if they call the funeral home, maybe they're not going to get the information that they need. But that's where we really wanted to. We started what we call the Resource Center at Henson Mortuary. And the Resource Center is basically just what you're talking about. It's a place where there is tons of information available for children, for families who have lost children, for people who are, trying to plan for end of life. I mean, we're taking it from the whole gamut of before the death to after the death, and then even when the funeral happens, people need help afterwards.
Well, that's true.
Absolutely.
And Fred is doing a lot to really help people. Nancy, I mean, just mm-hmm. yesterday, just yesterday evening, you had a session with about 20 different people up at Huntington Internal Medicine Group, HIMG.
Right. That was our very first, Nancy, that was our very first, we call it Grief University, and that was our very first event. We had close to 20-some people there. And it's showing us that there is a need, and people do want resources. People do need help, and it's when you say you need help, it's not a sign of weakness. When you say you need help, it's a sign of strength to me, because you're basically saying, "Hey, I don't know it all, and I want to be able to make the right decisions. Because if I make the right decisions, and I get that information from people like Nancy, or I get that information from people like Henson Mortuary, that I'm going to be able to make the best decisions for our family, and I won't have any regrets afterwards."
Absolutely.
So that's something that we're really trying to do also. Like I said, Grief University yesterday was our very first event for what we're going to be doing here in our area, and it was well received, so we're real appreciative of that. But let's go back to talking a little bit more about what you're doing, Nancy, and some of the other things that you're involved with.
Here's an idea. I do a lot of celebrity funerals. I advise people, small funeral homes, on how to conduct a celebrity funeral. And I've done Joe Frazier, and I helped out a little with Whitney Houston, uh-huh. Etta James, and some other folks. And one thing that I came up with, which was really successful, was I made some memorial blankets from funeral home gifts mm-hmm. of Whitney Houston, and we sent them to various funeral homes that wanted to participate, and they made funeral programs, and we had prayer vigils. Mm-hmm. Because Whitney Houston was, you know, she was in a church, and it was by invitation only, and she was such an icon that a lot of people really wanted to memorialize her. So 40 funeral homes across the United States actually had prayer vigils, or if it wasn't religious-oriented, just basically coming together to mourn her loss.
Right.
Within the funeral home, which was really kind of unique, because what it did was it allowed the public to come into the funeral home at a time where they were not experiencing a death, and meet the funeral home owners, meet the staff, and really experience something like, you know, that's out of the ordinary, that they could walk around the funeral home, see that it's not a scary place. They could have, you know, a cup of coffee and a pastry and interact with the funeral director, and they would get to know them as real people.
Yeah, it also gives
the community.
It also gives them a great opportunity to be able to celebrate the loss of someone that's been, you know, whether it's mm-hmm. a musician, an actor, or whatever it is. You know, when you grow up your whole life watching somebody on television, there's an emotional tie there a lot of times when people go, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe that, you know, Donna Summer died." You know,
mm-hmm. right.
So those type of things like that. So it gives people an opportunity that would not be able to go to a California or to Arizona or wherever, Florida, wherever that funeral would be at, and it gives them an opportunity to be able to still memorialize in their local community.
It's amazing how people relate to famous individuals, whether it's an entertainer or a politician or royalty or whatever. Mm-hmm. People feel a connection there. Earlier this week, I was doing an interview with an author who had written a book about Jackie Kennedy Onassis, and people still remember her and think about her. And, of course, Princess Diana has right. always been on the forefront.
Absolutely.
There.
Yeah, there is a connection there. I mean, it's interesting how we as human beings interact even from an emotional side with
yeah.
people. You know, like I said, you grew up your whole life watching whatever that favorite show is or listening to that favorite music, you know, from our high school years and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, when one of them passes away, there is an emotional loss there. So, I mean, you're exactly right, Nancy. I think that's a great, great thing.
And also, Fred, what it does is they get to meet people like you and your wife, and God forbid, but it happens, they experience a loss in their lives. They know who to come to. You're a trusted friend at this point. And the husband will say to the wife, well, you know, why don't we go ask Fred and his wife for some advice? Remember, we went to that memorial, and they did such a nice job, and it's such a pleasant place, their funeral home. Let's give them a call and let them handle the details.
Right, right.
And it takes a big burden off of them, because when you're in that moment of grief, you don't want to go hunting around for a funeral home or, you know, shopping like some people do. And they only do it out of fear because they don't know anyone in the community who handles funeral services. And they just feel like, okay, this isn't something I do every day, so I guess I have to call around and, you know, and they do price comparisons and they do it out of fear because they don't know what to expect.
Right.
They have no idea what the average cost of a casket is or what direct cremation means or any of that. But when they visit your funeral home at a time where there isn't a loss, like you said, where they're just memorializing a celebrity or some other occasion, then they bond with you, and it takes such a burden off the families.
Right.
Nancy, I think listeners would be very interested to know your website. I hope we can talk a little bit longer here, but what is your website?
www.buryachild.com, B-U-R-Y-A-C-H-I-L-D.
Okay.
And you can find me on Facebook as well.
Now, I'll say something right here. You know, there's some people probably listening that's going, oh, my gosh, Bury a Child. That sounds like such a tough name. But you know what? When we were going to look at a name for our grief university, you know, a lot of people hate to use the word grief. And we said, you know what? Like we were talking about a little while ago, that's one of the things that is probably wrong with society is we turn our head a lot of times and we go, okay, we're not going to say that word or we're going to act like that didn't happen.
Right.
And we end up with this emotional baggage that we carry all through life because we didn't face something face on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's good about your site, Bury a Child. I mean, we know exactly what that is. It's not a pleasant thing, but it is a resource. It's a good resource.
We shy away from saying the plain old words. We don't like to say death. We don't like to say died.
Yeah.
You know, we use euphemisms to cover that up.
Makes it feel softer, right?
Yeah,
not
I
as
guess
harsh,
so.
You know?
I guess it must, yeah. But Nancy, your foundation, your company, you say what it is.
Right, and I think you need to. And also, so people can find us in Google, because people do use those keywords, Bury and Child, because they're looking for help. They're just looking for anyone, even if they're just looking for someone to get on the phone with them for 20 minutes and just chat.
Right.
I mean, I had a family, actually related to a friend of mine in Wheatsville, Illinois, recently, and the 9-year-old child was in a traveling baseball league, and... Is that the commercial?
Yeah, you're good. You're good. We're coming to the bottom of the hour.
He was hit in the neck with the baseball during practice and died instantly. And the parents were devastated. They just needed someone to talk to.
Hey, Nancy, can you stay with us for the last half hour?
Absolutely.
And let's talk about some other things? Because I think we've got a lot of information that would be great to pass on to our listeners.
Terrific.
Okay, we'll be right back. You're listening to Planning for Tomorrow. And we are back to Planning for Tomorrow. Fred Kitchen here along with Gene Dean. And our guest today is Nancy Bourbon. And Nancy founded the company called Bury a Child. And Nancy, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Nancy, thank you for staying with us. You know, when we left, we were talking about your company and the website, buryachild.com, and a little bit about what you do. And I want to move into another segment of some things that I think would be really interesting also for our listeners. But I also want to go back and kind of revisit a little bit. Gene had asked me, and I think it would be great that maybe the listeners may have missed it. Let's talk about how you got Bury a Child. You know, tell us what drove you to get into this side of the funeral side of business, I guess.
Okay, I'm a funeral consultant. I write for a number of funeral publications, and I experienced some loss in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom passed, my sister passed, my brother passed, and I got to a point in my life where I decided that I really wanted to help other people.
Right.
I really wanted to help people in that final stage of their life. I have relatives who founded the Connecticut Hospice, the first hospice in Connecticut.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's really important, palliative care.
Very.
And also I just wanted to help people on that last journey. It's very, you know, it's very upsetting. There's a lot of grief. People, need someone to rely on and to be counseled. I have been a bereavement counselor for 20 to 25 years, and I just decided to just put both feet in the water and just do this.
You know, sometimes that's what you've got to do. You've got to kind of just stand out there and go, you know what, I know I'm going to be looked at by others, and people are going to have this big question mark going, mm-hmm. what in the world are you doing? And I get that sometimes myself.
Right.
But at the same time, when you see that you're making a difference in the lives of human beings, you don't look at all those other the other things that people were kind of questioning you on what you're doing. So sometimes you just got to step out there and do it, don't you?
Right, and I was actually featured in Moore Magazine, M-O-R-E, last year.
Uh-huh.
Because they actually did this very long article on women over 35 who have decided to kind of throw their careers away and embark on a new career in funeral service.
Wow.
And and all these women that they interviewed, there are 8 women, I believe, they all went into funeral service the same way that you would go into social work,
uh-huh.
the same way that you would become a nurse. They went into it because it's a caring profession, and they wanted to care for families.
Right, and thank goodness we're in the we're in year 2012 now,
mm-hmm.
Where women are more accepted, because there was a time that women wasn't accepted in the funeral profession.
You're absolutely right.
And you know, I'll give a little history here. I don't come from a family history of fourth and fifth generation. You know, I'm a first generation. Funeral director.
Good
you know,
you.
Something that I wanted to do, and I wanted to help people. So it was even, you know, at one time, it was rather difficult for guys like me to even get into the funeral profession. So I think it's great that we have women, because women do make great caregivers.
They do.
Yeah, you're great caregivers.
Nancy, you were always, I think, from the beginning, from your beginning career, you were into sort of counseling and helping people. Am I right on that?
Yes, yes. I went to Haiti for many years, and I did a lot of work down there. And I actually spearheaded the Haiti death relief effort in 2010. When they had the earthquake, I just felt compelled to help. And I contacted a number of funeral vendors, and I was able to get about $500,000 worth of cardboard caskets,
wow.
sanitation equipment, body bags, things that they needed to handle the situation in Haiti. And through one contact and another, Anderson Cooper was able to get a container, and he actually brought all these things down to Haiti. And we had an American businessman unearth the massive grave that they had,
mm-hmm.
and we buried 2,500 people individually in cardboard caskets, which
wow.
they decorated. So there was, you know, it was a great tragedy, but that then towards the end, all the people were able to actually bury their loved ones with dignity, and they were able to... You know, they had some closure. They had some psychological closure.
Right, and that's very important. I think a lot of people, not a lot of people, I think there's a segment of people that may miss that psychological closure and the importance of that, of moving forward in life,
mm-hmm.
and the hang-ups that it can cause you if you haven't had that psychological closure. Agree?
Right.
I think it's wonderful that you were able to be involved in that in Haiti. As a matter of fact, one of my grandsons just came back from a church group trip to Haiti,
mm-hmm.
and was telling me some of his experiences just last weekend. Of course, things still aren't good in Haiti, but you were able to take care of the immediate problems that were there.
Right. And right now, we're actually trying to raise money to build a crematorium in Haiti. One that uses alkaline hydrolysis, and basically what that is it's water-based cremation. It's not fire-based. And it's perfect for situations like these massive tragedies where you can actually, the body breaks down just as it does in fire-based cremation, but it does it with water. And it contains the DNA of the person, and it registers it in a computer. So say you lost your mother in that terrible tragedy in Haiti, and you came back 6 months later, and you didn't know whether she was cremated, you didn't know whether she was still under the rubble, you could actually go to this facility, and they would say, yes, on 3/31/2010, we did cremate your mother. She had passed, and we cremated her, and here are her bones.
Wow.
And what a great gift that is to give to a family.
Closure.
At closure, exactly.
Yeah.
At the end of a tragedy.
Tell me again what that is called, Nancy. Alkaline?
Well, actually, the consumer term for it is green cremation.
Oh, okay.
And it saves 90% of the carbon footprint and 75% of resources. So it's really being passed in a lot of states, and it's something I'm involved in. I'm involved in green burial and green cremation,
mm-hmm.
because I think we really need to save our planet.
Well, as a family, I and my family, we favor cremation, just the regular kind of cremation, mm-hmm. which, of course, happens very quickly. The green cremation that you're telling me about, does that happen quickly as
in
well?
In an hour.
Well.
An hour, yeah.
In an hour. And it's a very peaceful process. It looks like you're putting your loved one, they wrap them in a shroud, and they put them through, it looks like an MRI. It takes about an hour. There's no noise. And at the end, you get porous bones, which are ground up into white ash.
Same thing. It's
amazing. So you can still do, as with a regular cremation, you can still have an urn and everything?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And you can have a viewing. I mean, there's nothing, it's just a different way of, you go back to, it's accelerated decomposition. So what the earth does in 20 years, this machine does in an hour.
My goodness. Are there many funeral homes who are doing this now?
Actually, it's legal in 9 states, and it's been around since, that'll lead me into my next topic, it's been around since 1930, and it's the way that we usually put pets to rest.
Mm-hmm.
It's used in the Mayo Clinic, it's used at Cornell Medical Center, it's used at UCLA, and a large number of funeral homes nationwide. The places that it first became legal, like in Oregon and Florida, a large population of senior citizens, very green friendly. It's being used pretty extensively. But you know, the other states, people have to get used to the whole idea of a different way of cremation. I mean, back in the 60s and early 70s, people didn't really warm up to flame-based cremation either. And then it became more mainstream. But this is a more eco-friendly way to pass, and it's actually quite affordable. But it's the way that we put pets down, and I'm very involved with pet loss. I'm actually part of a pet loss alliance, and I'm very good friends with Colleen Ellis, who mm-hmm. kind of leads the movement, and she's introducing pet hospices.
I thought that was an interesting, let's talk a little bit about that, because mm-hmm. that is very interesting. Let's take just a quick break. And
okay.
when we take that quick break, we'll come right back, and I want to talk about the pet hospices, okay? You're listening
okay,
to Planning for Tomorrow. And welcome back to Planning for Tomorrow. Fred Kitchen here along with Gene Dean. And I want to take a quick minute here if I could and before we get right back to Nancy and mention our website. A lot of people are utilizing that website. 13,418 in less than 8 months or so.
Of the things that we talk about on the air, you post up on the website.
Right, right. So it's pftradio.com, Planning for Tomorrow Radio. You can go there, and there'll be Nancy's picture and her bio will be on the website today under our professional guests. But we post a lot of things as far as information, and probably some of this information that we're gathering today from Nancy, we will eventually get posted on the website because I think it's great consumer information. So, Nancy, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
When we left, we were talking about pet and alkaline hydrolysis, but we started talking about pet hospices. Man, that let's talk a little bit about that and find out about pet hospices.
Well, Fred, 62% of all people are pet owners today, and actually 83% of that number consider themselves pet parents.
Okay, let's talk about that. Pet parents. Tell me about that.
They consider their animal, whether it's a cat or a dog or some other exotic animal, part of the family. They
right.
actually give them a name, they give them a surname, and they consider them part of the family.
Right.
And a lot of people are being buried or cremated with their pets nowadays.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, and one of the things that I find interesting about this is, you know, there's some people. I have a friend that's a veterinarian, and he owns several clinics, and he and I've talked about this, and you know, there's some people that feel they're embarrassed sometimes to say, "Oh my gosh, I feel so embarrassed that I'm crying over this dog," and you know, people's going to think I'm crazy. But when you look at these numbers, at 63%, what did you say that number was? 82% of all Americans are pet owners.
83% are pet parents.
Yeah, I mean that's amazing number. So it lets people know that you're absolutely normal to feel that way about your pet.
Oh, absolutely. I had a wonderful Siamese cat years ago. I took her to the vet because she was obviously sick, and he said she's got 2 weeks to live, or you can put her down now, and I cried. I had to make that decision.
It's tough. So I think talking about pet loss is a very important thing here, Nancy.
Right. So, Fred, and you had just said before about you had to put your cat down, and a lot of people have to do that. They have to make that really sad decision because they might work full-time, or they and their spouse work full-time, and what are you going to do with a pet who's at the fourth stage of life, who's dying and needs palliative care? What are you going to do?
Right.
Well, Colleen Ellis and Tom Parmalee have come up with the answer to that, and that's pet hospices.
Wow.
Now, that sounds really, really interesting. Tell us how that works, Nancy.
Well, it'll work just like a traditional hospice, and there'll be people there to care for your pet 24/7 and ease them through their passing.
Is this something that is growing throughout the country, or is it pretty rare? This is a new procedure, isn't it?
It's kind of new. Colleen Ellis, who's really head of a lot of pet loss programs. She wrote a book called Pet Parents: A Journey Through Unconditional Love and Grief, and she's founded Two Hearts Pet Loss Center, and she's very committed to treating pets the same way that we treat humans. And she has set up some pet hospices in the Midwest, and we really think that this is going to be a trend because people are very busy nowadays, and everyone just loves their pets unconditionally, and it's just a terrible decision to make at end of life what to do with your pet. Should you put them down, or should you let them ease out of life the way that we do?
Well, I think it's a wonderful idea, don't you, Fred?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you think about it, like I said, when we were talking about the amount of people that are pet owners and then the amount of people that are consider themselves pet parents.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a pet owner myself, and, you know, I dread the day that something happens to my Yorkie.
And I'm a pet grandparent.
Yeah. So I mean, it is rather difficult. So I think you're definitely talking about something there. That's one of the things that we offer also at our funeral home, as it's more of a, I guess you'd say it's more of a service to people than it is even what we would even look at as a profit center of our business. It's definitely not that. But pet cremation, so that, you know, it's definitely something that people are wanting to, they're wanting to cremate their pets and have them still with them. So I think that the what you're talking about there with the hospices is a great tie-in. What else is going on in the pet industry?
Well, a lot of people are actually burying their pets. I was just up in Allentown, Pennsylvania for a couple of days, and I visited the Keystone Pet Cemetery and Natural Cremation Center, and it's just like a little funeral home added on to a traditional funeral home, and they have a client arrangement office, and, you know, you can go there and provide for your pet at end of life, and they give you options, and they'll take care of your pet. And then there's also a pet cemetery if you want to bury them, like with a green burial, or they have the, like we were just referring to, the water-based natural cremation. And they can watch their pets be put in, and then, you know, they can sit in the office and wait. Actually, a pet takes 20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And they can sit in the office and wait, and then they come out with the ashes, and they allow the family to put the ashes in the urn, and then they have like a little ceremony, an actual ceremony for the pet. A traditional funeral, whether they use a casket and do the green burial or whether they do the green cremation, they use an urn. They do pretty much what you would do at a human visitation and funeral.
Wow.
And if you've ever owned a pet, you'll understand that. Maybe if somebody's listening who has never had a pet might think, well, this is going over the top. But actually, if you've had a pet, you would appreciate having that availability.
Yeah, you would. You absolutely would. And that's one of the things that I believe is very important. And it's a great tie-in to what we're doing with memorialization. I mean, you know, we're memorializing our family members. Let's say our human family members. And then we're now tying that into memorializing what used to be, I guess you would say, just a form of disposition of our animals. You know, disposal in some cases.
What about pet cemeteries? We do have one, I think, over in Southern Ohio, don't we?
Mm-hmm. We have one in Southern Ohio, and then we have one in the upper, going towards Charleston. There's one up that way.
Okay.
So, you know, it's definitely something that's available to people in our area.
Really? A pet cemetery is always something separate. It's never combined with a regular human cemetery.
Yeah, Nancy,
is it?
I don't know what you're seeing, but I'm seeing that there is some cemeteries that are now, that were all human cemeteries, that are now they're segregating. They're actually taking a portion of their cemetery and they're setting that apart for pet. Are you seeing that across the country also?
Yes. And like in Keystone in Allentown, Pennsylvania, they have a separate pet cemetery, and it's quite charming, actually. They have figurines of dogs and cats, and they have a little office there you can go and sit down. It looks just like a cemetery, except there are smaller markers, and most of them are natural markers, like, you know, made of natural materials.
Mm-hmm.
But it's quite beautiful, and they decorate it for every season. So, you know, because children obviously want to visit their pets after they're gone.
Sure.
That's their first experience with death, usually. and they need to be kind of eased into it because it can be quite traumatic for a child when they lose their pet.
Exactly. And, you know, you bring up something there that kind of makes me wonder and think here just a little bit. Of course, I go back to when I was a child, and that's really probably what got me started into the funeral business, is I buried all of my pets. You know, that's what we did, and it was kind of ceremonial. And it makes me wonder sometimes in society if there is a connection sometimes that we see to adult, and I'm going to say this carefully, disposal, human disposal, that mm-hmm. some people have a mindset of human disposal as opposed to human disposition. If that goes back to maybe, like you said, when we were a child, that's a lot of times it's our first encounter with death. And if we're disposing of that pet, that dog or something like that, you know, that we're having the city to come and get it and dispose of it for us or something like that, then, you know, it kind of grows up in a mentality. You know, we're trained as a child in a lot of things that we do, and then we grow up to be an adult and we have the same thought process of, you know, just disposal when it comes to our family.
You know, Fred, I think fear. That maybe when a pet dies, it might be a good opportunity for parents to talk to the child, mm-hmm. not just about the death of the pet, but also death in general.
It's a great opportunity.
And I'm just wondering, maybe parents need some direction on how to do that.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're exactly right. And I know my daughter, we lost a goldfish probably a year or so ago, and that was a big event.
Sure.
That was a big event. And, you know, we waited till I got home from the funeral home,
yeah.
and I actually brought something home that we were able to place that goldfish in as a container, and we dug a hole, and we buried that goldfish in our yard.
Uh-huh.
And there was something ceremonial about that because it instilled some things in my daughters, that allowed them to realize the importance of actually honoring, I guess, what would have been that life that once lived, even as a fish.
That's right.
You know, but it instills things that they grow up and they understand the importance. Oh, you know what? We need to make sure that we, great-grandma and grandpa, get the honor and respect that they get because of the life they once lived.
Exactly.
You know?
When we're talking about pets, we just think cat and dog. But as you say, a goldfish
or a bird.
Or,
yeah, it could be anything, couldn't it, Nancy?
Yeah, and large ferrets, guinea pigs. Yeah, people have lots of different pets.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Is there anything that you think would really be beneficial for our listeners to know about the pet industry or pet cremation and pet memorialization before we start heading out here, Nancy?
Well, actually, I mean, people shouldn't be ashamed of their love for pets because pets love you unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
And as we live longer, and you know we are the baby boomers, and we will be living longer. As the children leave the nest, we naturally replace them with someone else that we can love, and that's our pet.
Right.
And, you know, when those pets pass on or die, we need to memorialize them just the way we would memorialize any of our dear friends, because they are our dear friends. And people don't have a problem paying $1,000, $2,000, or even $3,000 to memorialize their pets, because it's, you know, it's their last best friend. You know, as people age out, you know, they start losing people that they've known all their life. And then when they lose their pets, it's very traumatic for them. And I think it really needs to be recognized.
I agree. What do you think about all this, Jean? I mean, you being a pet lover also.
Yes. I think the idea of having a pet hospice is terrific. I
Me
was
too.
Fortunate. I always had somebody at home, either with the children or with a pet. But a lot of people, both members of the family work, or maybe the children in school. Who's going to take care of a sick pet? And
absolutely.
I love the idea of having a pet hospice. I think it's great.
Nancy, I think that's something that we need to probably talk about in greater detail. That would definitely be something that I would be interested in maybe introducing to our area here.
Absolutely.
Great.
I think it would become very, very popular.
Nancy, we really appreciate you for being on the show today, and I tell
you,
I think you've given us a ton of insight from the loss of a child and some of the things that people don't think about as far as, I think people just automatically just assume, you know, when we see in the newspaper an obituary and it's for a child, we think, well, you know, it's already been taken care of and things like that, but we don't know the behind-the-scenes process of no insurance and things like that, because there is cost still involved. And I think buryachild.com is a great resource that's available to, it's available to the country, isn't it, Nancy?
Yeah, it's available to the country. And my fiancé, Stephen Turner, and I basically run this alone.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few funeral friends that help us out. And, of course, I have a network of over 300 funeral directors, but anybody who would like to volunteer or donate money would certainly be go to a good cause.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. I definitely want to put your information up on our website. If any of our listeners today would like to get more information about burialchild.com, it'll be on our website at pftradio.com. Nancy, thank you so much for your insight today.
Thank you, Nancy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Jean, what do you think? I think we had a good show here today, a lot of good information.
Well, we started talking about the burial of indigent children, and we ended up with pets, so we ran the gamut this morning.
We ran the gamut, and I think we provided a lot of good information. Like I said earlier, you know, we talk about things sometimes that others don't want to talk about, but it's what we do.
That's right, absolutely. Well, it's been good to have our listeners with us, and
absolutely.
Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
94.1 FM and AM 930, where Huntington comes to talk to Ed Schultz weekdays noon to 3. Super Talk, 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC Huntington.